"The crew has rescued someone from the water," she said to Iyad when she returned. "How can anybody possibly have swum this far into the abyss? He was in a rowing boat." She lit a new candle. "Will you come with me?" Iyad nodded and rose to dress. Six Knights of the Body led them across the reconciliation to the captain's cabin. At present, it was occupied by one man. Someone had wrapped a coverlet around him. He was pallid and clammy, wearing a travel-soiled lacustrine tunic with a head of grey hair matted with salt water. His left arm was missing below the elbow. From the smell, the loss was recent. He looked up with bloodshot eyes. Iyad recognized him at once, but it was Sobran who spoke first. "Dr. Roos," she said, and her voice was ice. Sobran the Ninth, 36th Queen of the House of Berethnet, close to a decade of despising her from afar, and now here she was. Beside her was the person he had been sent here to kill. During his days at court, she had been known as Iyad Durrian, an Asiri with a relatively minor position in the upper household. Clearly not so minor now. He remembered her eyes, dark and piercing, and the proud way that she held herself. "Dr. Roos," Sobran said. She might have been addressing a rat. "Your Majesty," Niclaes said, his own voice dripping with disdain. He bent his head in a bow. "What a very great pleasure to see you again." The Queen of Innis took the seat on the other side of the table. "I'm sure you remember Mistress Iyad Durrian," she said. "She is now known as Dame Eadaz Uknara, Viscountess Nurtha." "Lady Nurtha," Niclaes said, inclining his head. He could not imagine what this young chamberer had done to acquire such high titles. She remained standing, arms folded. "Dr. Roos?" Her face betrayed none of her feelings towards him, but he suspected, from the way she took an almost protective stance beside Sobran, that they were not particularly warm. Niclaes tried not to meet her gaze. He could mask his intentions well enough, but something about her eyes made him think that they could see right through him. The blade was cold in his palm. Caliba had warned him that Iyad Durrian was much faster than an ordinary woman, but she would also have no idea that he was carrying something that could harm her. He must strike hard and fast, and with the wrong hand. Sobran placed her hands on the table, fingertips just touching. "How did you come to be this far into the abyss? Now for the lie."
"I was trying, madam," he said, "to escape from the exile you imposed on me."
"You believed you could cross the abyss in a rowing boat?"
"Desperation will drive any man to folly."
"Or woman? Perhaps that explains why I engaged your services all those years ago." One corner of his mouth crooked up.
"Your Majesty," he said, "you impress me. I had not thought that one heart could hold such rancor."
"My memory is long," Sobran said. He was sick with hatred. 7 years of imprisonment in Orisima meant nothing to her. She would still deny him a return to Mentendon, all because he had embarrassed her, because he had made a queen feel small. He saw it in those ruthless eyes. Caliba could make them weep. The witch had promised that the death of Iyad Durrian would break Sobran Berethnet, and once she was broken, Caliba would give her to the Nameless One. As he looked at her, Niclaes wanted it. He wanted to see her suffer, to be sorry. All he needed to do was kill her lady-in-waiting and take the white jewel she carried. Caliba would resurrect him if the guards ran him through. He would be allowed to return to Mentendon, not only with riches, but with Janart. She would give Janart back to him. If he did not do as she said, Leia would die.
"I want you to know something, Sobran Berethnet," Niclaes whispered. The pain in his arm was making his eyes water. "I loathe you. I loathe every lash of your eyes, every finger on your hands, every tooth in your mouth. I loathe you to the very marrow of your bones."
Sobran met his gaze without flinching.
"You cannot fathom the depth of the enmity I have felt for you. I have cursed your name with every sunrise. The thought that I might one day create the elixir of life, then deny it to you, has driven my every action. All I longed to do was thwart your ambition." "You will not speak to Her Majesty in this manner," one of her shining knights interrupted. "I will speak to Her Majesty however I please. If she wants me to stop, let her stop me herself," Niclaes said curtly, "rather than letting her metal-clad mannequin do it for her."
Still,
Sabran said nothing. The knight in question looked at her before desisting, tight-lipped.
Years I spent on that island, McLay spoke through gritted teeth. Years on a scrap of land, clinging to Cape Hisan, watched and mistrusted. Years of walking the same few streets, aching for home, all because I had promised you a gift that had never been given, and you, the Queen of Innis, were naive enough to swallow it whole. Yes, I deserved chastisement. Yes, I was a cur, and a year or two away might have done me good, but 7... By the saint, madam, death by burning would have been a mercy in comparison.
His hand clenched around the blade so hard that his nails bit into his palm.
I could forgive your theft of my money. I could forgive your lies, Sabran whispered. But you preyed on me, Ruse. I was young and afraid, and I confided my deepest fear to you. That fear was something I concealed even from my ladies of the bedchamber. And that warrants 7 years in exile. It warrants something. Perhaps I will apologize when you consent to make even the slightest reparation for your lies.
I wrote to you groveling, McLay spat, after Albrecht Lievelin refused to allow me to return home. He was so desirous of your sacred cunt that he prized it over.
Sabran stood, her face bloodless, and every partisan in the room snapped towards his chest.
You will not speak of Albrecht Lievelin again, she said. Deadly soft, or I will have you thrown off this ship in pieces.
He had gone too far. The knights of the body wore no visors indoors. He could see the shock written on their faces, a disgust that ran far deeper than it would at a crude insult.
He's dead, McLay deduced. Isn't he?
The silence confirmed it. I receive no letter, Sabran kept her voice low. Why not disclose its contents to me now? He chuckled darkly.
Oh, Sabran, 7 years have not changed you. Shall I tell you why I'm really here?
The blade was ice in the heat of his hand. Behind Sabran, Ea Durian was none the wiser. Just one lunge and he could get it into her throat after all. He could hear Sabran scream. Watch that mask of a face crack open. That was when the door swung open, and none other than Tane Madushi strode into the cabin. His jaw dropped. The knights of the body crossed their partisans in front of her at once, but she shoved against them, looking more than ready to claw his throat open.
"You cannot trust this man," she barked at Sabran. "He is a blackmailer, a monster."
"Ah, oh, Lady Tane," McLay said dryly. "We meet again. The strings of our fates appear to be tangled."
In truth, he was shocked to see her. He assumed that she had drowned, or that the Golden Empress had hunted her down. What she was doing with the Queen of Innis was beyond him.
"I let you live on Komoridu," she hissed at him, "but no more. You always come back, like a weed."
She wrestled against the knights of the body.
"I will gut you with my own blade, you soulless—"
"Wait!"
Ead grasped her shoulder.
"Dr. Ruse, you said you would tell us why you are really here. I recommend you do so now before your trail of destruction catches up with you." "He is here to do us ill for his own gain," Medushi said, staring him out. "He always is."
"Then let him confess it."
Medushi shrugged off her hand, but stopped pushing against the guards. Her narrow shoulders heaved. McLay sank back into his seat. His arm was full of fire. His head throbbed.
"The Medushi is right," he said between heavy breaths. "I was sent here by some sorceress or shapeshifter, Kaliba."
Ea turned sharply to face him.
"What?"
"Damned if I knew such things existed, but I suppose I should stop being surprised at this rate."
A stab of pain in his stump.
"In telling you this, I condemn a friend to death." His jaw trembled. "But I think that friend would want me to do this."
He removed the shard of metal and laid it on the table. One of the knights of the body made towards it, but Ead warded him away with the other hand.
"Kaliba gave it to me. It was she who left me in the boat. She told me I was to reach the ship to get close to you, Lady Nurtha," McLay said, "to drive this into your heart."
"A Steren blade," Ead said, eyeing it. "Like Ascalon. Not large enough to use against the Nameless One, but it would have pierced my skin well enough." Her gaze flicked up. "I can only assume she fears me more than she did before. Perhaps she has heard the jewels calling." Jewels? Nicolas raised his eyebrows. You have them both? With a nod, Iyad sat beside Sabran.
The Witch of Innisgir is persuasive, she said to him. She must have promised you all the riches you desired. Why confess?
Oh, she offered me something far greater than riches, Lady Nyrtha. Something for which I would gladly sacrifice what little wealth remains to me, Nicolas said, with a bitter smile. She showed me the face of my only love, and she promised to return him to me. And yet you do not do her bidding? Once, he said, I would have. If she had not worn his face, if she had only promised that I would see him again, I might well have become her little homunculus. But seeing him, I was repulsed, because Janot, the name snared in his throat, Janot is dead. He chose the manner of his death, and by resurrecting him like that, Kaliba dishonored his memory. He had watched him. I am an alchemist. All my life, I believed that the end goal of alchemy was the glorious transformation of imperfection into purity, lead into gold, disease into wellness, decay to eternal life. But now I understand. I see. Those were false destinations. His professor had been right, as always. She had often said that the true alchemy was the work, not its completion. Nicolas had thought it was her way of comforting those who never made any progress. Sounds foolish, I know, he continued, like the ravings of a madman, but it was just what Janot always knew, and what I failed to see. For him, the pursuit of the mulberry tree in the east was his great work. He had the final piece, but not the rest.
Janot ut Ziodur, he had said softly. He looked at her through burning eyes.
Janot was my midnight sun, he rasped, the light I have followed. My grief drove me to Innis, and that step took me to the east. There I tried to finish his work in the hope that it would bring me closer to him. By doing all this, I completed, unbeknownst to me, the first stage of alchemy, of my work, the putrefaction of my soul. With his death, my work began. I faced the shadows in myself.
Nobody moved or spoke. Iyad was looking at him with a strange expression, something like pity, but not quite. Nicolas pressed on, trying not to notice the burning in his brow. He was on fire, body and mind.
So you see, he said, the work lies in myself. I fell into shadow, and now I must rise so I might be a better man.
That would take a long time, the dragon rider said.
Oh, it will, Nicolas agreed, fevered as much by excitement as the wound. But that is the point, don't you see?
I see that you are raving mad.
No, no, I am approaching the next stage of transmutation, the white sun, the cleansing of impurities, the illumination of the mind. Any fool could tell that nothing can bring Janot back, Nicolas ploughed on. So I will resist Kaliba. She represents my past impurities, the one who comes to undo my progress and return me to my old instincts. To earn the white sun, I will give you the key to destroying all darkness.
Which is, he had said, knowledge.
He finished, triumphant. The Nameless One has a weakness. The 20th scale on his chest of armor is the one that Clearland Ongenu damaged all those years ago. She failed to hit the mark, but perhaps she opened the door. A door into his armor.
He had studied his face. Her eyes narrowed a little.
You can't trust him, Medushi said. He would sell his soul for a handful of silver.
I have no soul to sell, honored Medushi, but I may yet earn one, Nicolas said.
Saint, he was hot.
You see, Jan did leave someone behind, someone who I still care for. Trude ut Ziodur, his granddaughter. I want to be what he was to her, and to do that I must be better, I must be good, and this is the way.
He finished, staring around in wall-eyed excitement, but all was still. Sabran lowered her gaze. And Iyad closed her eyes for a moment.
She is still in Innis, a maid of honour. As Nicolas looked between them, his smile faded. Isn't she?
Leave us, Sabran said to her knights of the body. Please. They obeyed their queen.
No, Nicolas whispered, trembling. No! His voice cracked. What did you do to her?
It was Igrian Crest. It was Iyad who spoke. Trude plotted with her companion, Triam Sulliard, to bring about a reunion between East and West.
she staged an assault on Queen Sabran, which Cress infiltrated to cause the death of Arbrecht Lievelin. Maclay's tried to take it in. Trude had never expressed strong political views, but when he had last seen her, she had been no more than 10 years old. As he listened, numbness enveloped him. His ears rang. Everything turned dark at the corners, and a chain twisted around him and cut away his breath. By the time Iad had finished speaking, he could no longer feel anything but the dull throb at the end of his arm. The fires within him had suddenly died. The shadows had returned. "You left her in the Dern Tower," he forced it out. "She should have been sent to Brickstad and tried fairly, but no, you drew it out just as you did to me." A tear seeped into the corner of his mouth. "Her bones lie on one side of the world, and Triumph Sulliard's on the other. How much suffering might have been avoided if they had felt safe enough to broach their ideas with you, Sabran, rather than take matters into their own hands." Sabran did not look away. "It is not only you who seeks a white son," she said. Slowly, Nicolais rose. Cold sweat dotted his brow. The pain in his arm was now so great he could hardly see. "Is Crest dead?" "Yes," Sabran said. "Her reign in the shadow of the throne is at an end." It should comfort him. Perhaps one day it would, but it would not bring her back. He pictured Trude, the granddaughter he had never and would never have. Her eyes and freckles had come from her mother, but her red hair, that had been a gift from her grandsire. All gone. He remembered how her face had lit up when he had visited the Silk Hall, and how she had run to him with her arms full of books and begged him to help her learn from them. "Everything," she had said. "I want to know everything." Above all things, it was her bright mind, ever curious, that made her most like Janart. "High Princess Ermuna has extended you an invitation to return home," Sabran said quietly. "She seeks no permission from Innes, and even if she had, I have no further quarrel with it." It was all he had wanted to hear for 7 years. Victory had never tasted so much like ashes. "Home, yes." A hollow laugh escaped him. "Take my gift of knowledge. Destroy the Nameless One so there might be other children who strive to change the world. And then, I pray you, Your Majesty, leave me to my shadows. I'm afraid they are all I have left."
Chapter 70. Abyss. The Reconciliation was a ghost ship in the distance. Loth watched other vessels emerge behind it from the fog. It was the end of the second day of spring, and they were above the Bonehouse Trench, the deepest part of the abyss. In Cascaro, a group of mercenaries would be making their way through the mountain pass to kill King Sagoso and secure the Don Marta Morosa. If she was still alive. If the Flesh King had already died, his daughter might be a puppet now. The ensigns of every country, save one, rippled among the ships. The unceasing Emperor was gazing at them. Hands behind his back. He wore a scaled cuirass over a dark robe, a heavy surcoat on top, and an ornate iron helmet inlaid with silver moons and stars. "So," he said, "it begins." He glanced at Loth. "I thank you, Lord Artoloth, for the pleasure of your company."
"The pleasure was mine, Majesty."
It took time for the ships to be tied to each other. Finally, Sabran came to the Dancing Pearl with Lady Nelda Stillwater and Lord Lemond Finch on either side of her, followed by most of her Knights of the Body and a throng of Innish naval officers and soldiers. Befitting the situation, her attire struck a delicate balance between splendour and practicality. A gown that was more like a coat, lacking a framework and cutting off above the ankle, with riding boots beneath. A crown of 12 stars, interspersed with dancing pearls, sat atop her braided hair. And though she was no warrior, she wore the Sword of Virtudom, the stand-in for Ascalon, at her side. When Loth saw Iad in the party, wrapped in a cloak with a fur collar, he breathed without strain for the first time in days. She was alive. Tane had kept her word. Tane herself was also among those who came across, though her dragon was nowhere to be seen. When their gazes met, she inclined her head. Loth returned the gesture. The unceasing Emperor stopped a short distance from Sabran. He bowed, while Sabran curtsied.
"Your Majesty," the unceasing Emperor said.
Her face was cast in marble. Your Imperial Majesty. There was a moment in which they regarded one another, these two rulers who governed with irreconcilable mandates, who had lived out their lives in the shadow of giants.
Forgive our ignorance of your language, Sabran said at last. We understand you speak ours.
Indeed, the unceasing Emperor said.
Though I assure you that I am ignorant of Inish matters on most other fronts, language was one of my passions as a boy.
He offered a gracious smile.
I see you have a passion from my side of the world, too. Dancing pearls.
We are very fond of them. This crown was made before the grief of ages, when Inish still traded with Psyche.
They are exquisite. We have fine pearls in the Empire of the Twelve Lakes, too. Freshwater pearls.
We should like to see them, Sabran said. We must thank your Imperial Majesty and the all-honored warlord for your swift acquiescence to our request for aid.
My brother-in-arms and I could hardly have refused, Your Majesty, given the urgency of our situation and how passionately Lord Arteloth argued for this alliance.
We expected no less. Loth caught her eye, and she gave him the faintest smile. May we ask if the dragons of the East are close? She added. We rather expected to be able to see them, or perhaps they are smaller than we have always assumed.
A few nervous chuckles rose.
Well, the unceasing Emperor said, the legends say they could once make themselves smaller than a plum. For now, however, they are as large as you have imagined. The corner of his mouth twitched. They are beneath the waves, Your Majesty, immersing themselves in water, gathering their strength. I hope very much that you will be able to meet the Imperial Dragon, my guiding star, after this battle.
Sabran maintained a neutral expression. We are sure it would be an honor, she said. Does your Imperial Majesty, her voice strained a little, ride on this being?
When I am on progress, and perhaps denied,
he leaned towards her, just slightly.
I must confess, however, to a trifling fear of heights. My virtuous grandmother tells me I am unlike all my predecessors in the House of Laxang in this respect.
Perhaps that is a favorable sign. After all, Sabran said, this is a day for new traditions. At this, he smiled.
It is.
Another fanfare, and the warlord of Psyche joined the meeting. Silver-haired with a thin moustache, Pitosu Nadama had the build and bearing of a man who had once been a warrior, but had not had occasion to take up arms in many years. A sleeveless coat of gold covered his armour. With him were 30 of the dragon riders of Psyche, who bowed to the foreign rulers. The rider Loth had seen in the water was among them. She had removed her helm and mask, revealing a sun-beaten face and hair in a topknot. She was looking at Tane, who looked straight back at her. Nadama hailed the unceasing Emperor in his own language, before turning to Sabran.
Your Majesty. Even his voice was military, clipped and clear. My fellow riders will fight alongside you this day, despite our differences.
He glanced at the unceasing Emperor.
This time, we will ensure the Nameless One does not return to plague us.
Be assured that Inis stands with you, all-honored warlord, Sabran answered. White breath fluttered from her mouth. This day, and for the rest of time.
Nadama nodded.
Trumpets sounded then, announcing King Rhaenys of the House of Horstra, a pale giant of a man with golden hair, eyes like iron, and great knotted muscles. He greeted Sabran with a bone-crushing embrace, before introducing himself brusquely to the eastern rulers. His hand stayed close to the gold-plated rapier at his side. Despite the friendly opening, the tension between the four of them was a low-burning fire. One errant breath of wind could fan it. After centuries of estrangement, Loth supposed it was of little wonder that each side should be wary of the other. When they had conferred in low voices for a time, the rulers withdrew to their own ships. The dragon riders marched after the warlord. The moment they began to leave, Tane turned on her heel and strode in the other direction. Iyad followed Sabran into her cabin, but motioned to Loth to join them. Loth waited for most of the guests to clear the deck. As soon as he was past the Knights of the Body and through the door, he scooped Iyad right off her feet. Being your friend is quite a strenuous affair, you know, he said, feeling her smile against his own cheek. He gathered Sabran close with the other arm. That applies to both of you. Rich words from the man who sailed into the east with pirates, Sabran said into his shoulder. He chuckled. When he set Ea down, he saw that the stain was gone from her lips, though she looked tired. I'm all right, she told him, thanks to Tane and to you. He cupped one of her hands between his. You still feel cold. It will pass. Loth turned to Sabran and straightened her crown of pearls, which had gone awry in the embrace. I remember your mother wearing this. She would be proud of this alliance, Sab. She raised a smile. I hope so. We have an hour before the third day of spring begins. I'd better see Meg. Meg is not here, Ead said. Loth stilled. What? She told him everything that had happened since she had woken from her sleep of death. How Tane had eaten the fruit, and how the rulers of the south had come to broker an alliance. When she revealed exactly where his sister was, Loth took a deep breath. You let her go to Cascaro, he said to them both. To a siege. Loth, Ead said, Meg made her own choice. She was determined to play her part, and I saw no reason to take that from her, Sabran explained. Captain Lintley is with her. He imagined his sister on the barren plain, hunkered in a field hospital among the filth and blood of battle. He thought of Margaret with the blood blaze and felt sick. I must address the Innish seafarers, Sabran murmured. I pray we see the dawn. Loth swallowed the cork of dread in his throat. May Cleland watch over us all, he said. On the deck of the Dancing Pearl, Tane stood among the soldiers and archers who had gathered to await the hour. The Unceasing Emperor was on the upper deck. Behind him, like an immense shadow, the Imperial Dragon loomed. Her scales were darkest gold, eyes blue as glaciers, long tendrils matched the white of her horns. At the stern were three of the Cycones Dragon Elders. Even after all the time Tane had spent in the company of dragons, these ones were the most colossal she had ever seen. Close to the elders, the warlord of Psyche kept watch beside the sea general. Tane knew her former commander was more than aware of her presence. Every time she looked away from him, she sensed his attention snap to her face. Onren and Kampuru were among the dragon riders. The latter had gained a scar across one eye since Tane had last seen him. Their dragons waited behind the defiance. A touch on her arm made her look back. A figure emerged from the shadows behind her, wearing a hooded cloak. Ead. Where is Roos? Tane asked her softly. The fever has set in. His fight today will be for his life. Ead never took her gaze from Sabran. Has your dragon arrived? Tane shook her head. Could you ride another? I am no longer a rider, but surely today you do not seem to understand, Tane said shortly. I am disgraced. They will not even speak to me. Finally, Ead nodded. Keep the jewel close, was all she said before she returned to the shadows. Tane tried to concentrate. A breath of wind caressed her spine, unsettled her hair, and rose to fill the sails of the Dancing Pearl. Deep in the abyss, there was movement, no more than the flicker of butterfly wings or the quickening of a child in the womb. He comes, the Imperial Dragon said. Her voice quaked through the ships. Tane reached for her case. The jewel was so cold that she could feel it through the wood and lacquer. The wind howled against the sails. This was it. Clouds gathered above the ships. The Imperial Dragon called out to her brethren in the language of her kind. The Cycones Dragons joined their voices to hers. Water bubbled on their scales. The mist grew thick as they brought the storm, and with it, their strength. As they took off from the sea, water streamed off them, soaking the humans below. Tane shook it from her eyes. It happened so quickly. One moment, all silent, save the rain. Then, madness. The first thing she thought was that the sun had risen. Such was the light that ignited in the north. Then came a heat that sucked the breath from her. Fire exploded across the Cycones warship Chrysanthemum, moments before a second eruption tore through the fleet of the Northern King, and a full-throated roar announced the arrival of the enemy. When the Black High Western appeared, the downwind from its flight extinguished every lanternton every ship. Firedale! Someone bellowed. Tane choked on the hot stench from his scales. Screams rang out.
In the light from the fire, she saw Loth rushing Queen Sabran to her Knights of the Body, and the Imperial Guard encircling the unceasing Emperor before a shoulder slammed into her chest, knocking her flat.
A war conch sounded in the darkness. The riders disappeared with their dragons into the sea. Even as chaos sparked around her, Tane ached to be among them. The Black High Western circled the fleet. Its servants came tearing above the ships. They tangled with the eastern dragons, wings, endless wings flocking like bats, tails whipped lightning across the sky. A wyvern flew straight at the mainmast of the Reconciliation. It groaned and buckled, bringing down the highest sail. An agonized cry went up from the deck. The sails of the iron-armored Chrysanthemum were engulfed in flame. Tane ran with the crowd, pistol in hand. The force of the power inside her, her Sidon, throbbed in her blood like a second heartbeat. A fire breather landed in front of her, bigger than a stallion. Two legs, a scarlet tongue rattled in its mouth. Wyvern. All her life she had prepared for this. It was what she had been born to do. Tane took out the rising jewel. White light flared out of it, and the wyvern screamed in rage, shielding itself from the glow with its wing. She drove it back, away from the archers. Another wyvern crashed down behind her, shaking the deck, eyes like live coals in its head. Caught between them, Tane stuffed the jewel back into its case with one hand, and drew her Inish sword from its scabbard with the other. The weight of it unbalanced her, and the first swing went wide, but the second found its mark. Red-hot blood spurted as the blade hewed through scale and flesh and bone. The wyvern struck the deck, headless, its body still thrashing. And just for a moment, she saw Sousa in that pool of blood, a head of dark hair rolling into a ditch, and she could not move an inch. The first wyvern vomited flame at her back. She twisted just in time. Of its own accord, her hand flew up, and the golden light discharged from her palms. The draconic fire glanced off her, burning up the shoulder of her shirt and making her cry out as blisters formed, but the rest of the flames petered into the fog. The wyvern cocked its head, pupils slitted, before it let out a hideous snarl and erupted with more blue-tinged fire. Tane backed away, sword at the ready. She needed a Cycones blade. No one could move like water with this dead weight in their hands. Her enemy spat its fire in bursts. Rain hammered its hide. When it was close enough, Tane ducked a bite from its rotting teeth and slashed at its legs. Her next move was too slow. A burly tail snapped across her midriff, its spines just missing her. She went flying across the deck. The sword clattered out of her hand just before she hit one of the masts and thumped down again, bashing her head. The shock of the impact held her in place. At least one of her ribs was cracked. Her back felt shredded. As the wyvern stalked towards her, nostrils smoking, a Cycones soldier thrust his blade into its flank. In the first moment of its rage, he circled the wyvern and aimed for its eye. It clapped its jaws over his leg and slammed him into the deck, over and over, back and forth, as if he were a scrap of meat. Tane heard his bones shatter, his screams bubbling away. The beast hurled what was left over the side. A charred soldier lay nearby, clad in blue and silver armor. Tane took up a shield emblazoned with the heraldry of the Kingdom of Hroth and hefted it onto her left arm, clenching her jaw against the pain in her ribs. With the other hand, she lifted her bloody sword. The heat from the fires drew sweat to the surface. The sword was slippery in her hand. She was no longer aware of the other fire breathers that flocked above the ships, tearing at sails and breathing great clouds of fire, or the soldiers battling around her. All she knew was the wyvern, and all the wyvern knew was her. When it lunged for her, she rolled away from its bite and hurdled the tail that whipped towards her knees. Its lack of front limbs made it too cumbersome to fight at close quarters with something as small and quick as a human. This fiend had been bred for swooping and snatching, like a bird of prey. As it pursued her, her sword gouged the wound the soldier had left. Her shield blocked a flame. The wyvern wrenched it out of her grip. She thrust the sword up, crunching through the underside of its jaw and deep into the roof of its mouth, and the fire in its eyes was extinguished. She backed away from the corpse. The Sidon replenished her before exhaustion could set in. Nothing could touch her, not even death. As the Black High Western smashed down the mast of the Water Mother, Tane snatched up a fallen spear. Her eyes ached. She could see the fire breathers as if they were motes of dust in a sunray. With one swing of her arm, the spear flew at a bird-headed monster and impaled its wing, pinning it to its body. Flapping wildly with the other, it plummeted into the waves. The reconciliation had pulled away from the Dancing Pearl, so had the Defiance and the Chrysanthemum. Their cannons were slanting upward. She heard the crump of a swivel gun before the reconciliation released everything it had. Chain shots swiveled skyward and snagged on wings and tails. A deafening whoomp, whoomp began as the cannons fired. Crossbow bolts shivered from the lacustrine ships, splinters of bronze catching the firelight. She could hear the captains bellowing orders and pistols discharging from the decks of the Defiance and the twang of bowstrings across the fleet. The clamour was too much. Her head was spinning. She was drunk on Sidon, seeing the whole battle like a vision. A weapon. She needed another weapon. If she could reach the Defiance, she could find something. One step took her onto the gunwale, and she dived into the sea. The quiet beneath the water cooled the fire within. She surfaced and swam hard for the Defiance. Nearby, one of the Ursiri ships had been overcome by flame, and it shed its crew from every side. There would be black powder on that ship, lots of it. She took a huge breath and swam downward. When the ship exploded, she felt the flash of heat through the water. Foul orange light stained the abyss. The force of it took hold of her and spun her off course. She kicked back, blinded by her own hair. As she neared the Defiance, she surfaced. Black smoke swelled from the flaming carcass of the ship. For a moment, Tane could only stare at the destruction. The black High Western settled on the ruins as though they were a throne. Flesh fed and banded with muscle, it was a grotesque size. The spikes on its tail were each 10 feet long. Fyrdell.
Sabran Berethanet, his voice bled with hatred. My master comes for you at last. Where is the child that will keep him at bay?
As he mocked the Queen of Innis, a Cycanese elder dragon, glowing all over, shattered the surface of the abyss. One great leap took him high over the Dancing Pearl to catch a wyvern in his mouth. Lightning flashed between his teeth. His eyes shone blue-white. Tane saw the wyvern erupt into the white flame before the dragon plunged back into the sea, taking his trophy with him. Fyrdell watched the display with bared teeth.
Dranghein Laxeng, the name boomed across the water. Will you not show your face?
Tane kept swimming. The cannons of the Defiance seemed as loud as the thunder. She found the handholds and climbed.
Behold the roar of Hroth who hides in the snow! Fyrdell sneered, exposing his teeth again.
Cannons barked from the bear guard in answer.
Behold the warlord of Psyche who preaches unity between human and sea slug. We will throw down your guardians and scatter them like sheep as we did centuries ago. We will leave black sand from shore to shore.
Tane reached the deck of the Defiance. Cycanese soldiers wielded longbows and pistols. An arrow skittered off a wyvern. She pulled a sword from the hand of a dead woman. Somewhere in the night, a dragon was keening.
"Gone are the days of heroes," Fyrdell said. "From north to south and west to east, your world will burn."
Tane took the rising jewel from its case. If Kaliba was close, she would be drawn to its power. Seren punched through the waves like a needle through silk and drew them like a shroud over Fyrdell. He launched himself skyward with a snarl, droplets raining off his wings, scales billowing steam.
"Black sails! West, south, west!" came a shout.
In the distance, through the haze of smoke, Tane could see them.
"Escali Ensign!" the captain of the Reconciliation bellowed. "The Draconic Navy!"
Tane counted them. 20 ships. Another wyvern swooped, and she rolled behind a mast. A full line of archers fell to its tail. A soldier hurled his halberd at the creature, straight into its haunch. An archer was slumped over the gunwale, bones shattered. Tane shoved the jewel away and took his bow and quiver. 4 arrows left.
"Fire breather!" the lookout above her roared. "Port! Port!"
The remaining archers turned and drew while matchlocks were reloaded. Tane knocked an arrow of her own. A second High Western, pale as a crane, came out of the night. Tane watched the wings fold inward, the scales change seamlessly to skin, the green eyes gain their whites, and black hair flow where horns had been. By the time it landed on the Defiance, the worm had become the same woman Tane had seen in Lassia. Red lips closed over the last flicker of a forked tongue.
"Child," Kaliba said in Innish, "give me that jewel."
Something in Tane urged her to obey.
"It is not a weapon. It is the imbalance."
The witch stalked towards her.
Give it to me.
Shaken, Tane pulled back her bowstring and forced herself not to look at what Kaliba held. The blade was the bright, pure silver of a star. Ascalon.
A bow? Oh, dear. Eadaz should have warned you that you cannot kill a witch with a splinter of wood or fire.
Kaliba kept striding towards her, naked, eyes wild.
I should have expected this defiance from the seed of Nipporo.
With every step Kaliba took across the deck, Tane took one away from her. Soon she would run out of ship. The bow was useless. Her enemy could shapeshift away from an arrow in a heartbeat, and it was clear the sword would transfigure with her. When it was in her hand, it was like another limb.
I wonder, Kaliba said, if you could best me in combat. After all, you are first blood.
Her mouth curved.
Come, blood of the mulberry tree. Let us see who is the greater witch.
Tane set down her bow. Planting her feet apart, she let her side and rise like the sun into her hands. Chapter 71, Abyss. On the reconciliation, Loth stood guard by his queen in the shadow beneath the quarterdeck, surrounded by 12 of the knights of the body. One of the topsails was afire. Bodies strewed the decks. Cannons hawked, barshot and chainshot, cut with cries of fire from the bosun, while siege engines from Perchling hurled grappling hooks that tangled around legs and wings. It was all the gunners could do to avoid the eastern dragons. Though some of them were in flight, strangling the fiery breeds the way snakes crush their quarry, others had adopted a different way to kill. They would dive beneath the waves, then swim up with all their might and breach. One clap of their jaws and they would drag their prey back to the deep. Water steamed from their scales as they soared over the reconciliation. Fire sputtered out beneath them. Sobran kept one hand on the sword of Virtudom. They watched the pale worm transform into a woman and land on the Defiance. Kaliba, the witch of Iniska. Iad will go to her, Sobran shouted to him over the clangor. Someone must distract the witch so she can strike. The draconic navy was drawing closer by the moment. A square rigger with red sails bore down on the reconciliation.
Hard to port, the captain bawled. Gun crew, belay last order, fire on that ship.
A terrible shriek of wood and metal. The ship rammed straight into the nearby Merrow Queen.
All right, Loth called to Sobran. To the Defiance!
The knights of the body were already moving. Keeping Sobran between them, they struck out across the deck. As they ran, they shed their heaviest armor. Breastplates, greaves, and pauldrons clattered in their wake. Cannons ripped into the enemy ship.
Swords! The captain drew his cutlass. Get Her Majesty to the boat!
There's no time! Loth shouted. The captain gritted his teeth. His hair clung to his face.
Take her then, Lord Artalaf, and don't look back, he replied. Hurry!
Sobran climbed over the side of the ship. Loth joined her, and she took his hand. The waves swallowed them all. Tane hurled fire at Kaliba across the Defiance. Flames danced along the deck, catching in pools of draconic blood. When the witch countered the attack with lurid red fire of her own, so hot it roasted the moisture from the air, Tane gripped the rising jewel. Seawater crashed onto the ship, which pitched beneath them, and the fires were smothered. Every soldier and archer had fled from the jewel. The ship was their battleground. Kaliba moved lithely from bird to woman, quick as lightning. Tane screamed in frustration as a beak ripped her cheek open, and a talon almost took out her eye. Each time the witch changed, Ascalon changed with her. When she was in her human guise, she swung with the sword, and when Tane parried and their blades locked, the rising jewel sang in answer.
I hear it, Kaliba breathed. Give it to me.
Tane slammed her forehead into hers and struck with a concealed knife, catching the witch across the cheek. Kaliba reeled, eyes flared wide, red lacing her face. Then antlers erupted from her skull, and she was a bleeding white stag, ghastly and massive, and the sword was gone again. Tane used the jewel to throw back a cockatrice. The siren sharpened her senses, made her limbs move quicker than she would have thought possible as the stag thundered across the deck. She saw that one of the antlers was tipped with silver, and as it lowered its head to skewer her, she brought her sword up, severing it.
Caliba collided with the deck in human form. Blood drooled from her shoulder where a chunk of flesh had been hacked away, and Ascalon lay beside her, glazed with ruby. Tane lunged for it, but the witch already had fire in her hands. Tane threw herself behind the main mast. Red fire blazed off her thighs, so hot like molten iron on her flesh that it made her cry out. Eyes full of brine, she crushed the pain and struck out across the deck. She was almost at the stern when she stopped in her tracks. Queen Sabran was on the Defiance. Loth stood beside her, broadsword drawn, and 12 bodyguards fanned out around them. All of them were dripping wet.
"Sabran," Caliba breathed.
The queen gazed at her forebear. Their faces were identical.
"Your Majesty,"
one of the guards stammered. All of them were looking between their queen and her double.
"This is sorcery."
"Stand back," Sabran said to her guards.
"Yes, do, gallant knight. Do as my offspring decrees."
Caliba curled her fingers around the flame in her palm.
"Do you not see that I am your damsel for mother of Innis?"
The knights did not move, neither did the queen. Her left hand strangled the hilt of her sword.
"You are an imitation of me," Caliba said to her, venomous, "just as your sword is a cheap imitation of this one."
She held up Ascalon. Sabran flinched.
"I did not want to believe, Iad," she replied,
"but I see that my affinity with you cannot be denied." She stepped towards Caliba.
"You took my child from me, Witch of Iniska. Tell me, after you went to so much trouble to found the House of Berethanet, why would you destroy it?"
Caliba closed her fist, and the flame was snuffed.
"One shortcoming of immortality," she said, "is that everything you build seems too small, too transient. A painting, a song, a book, all of them rot away. But a masterwork made over many years, many centuries, I cannot tell you the fulfillment it brings. To see your actions in your lifetime made into a legacy."
She lifted up Ascalon.
"Galleon lusted after Cleolind on Genu the moment he laid eyes on her. Though I had nursed him at my breast, though I gave him the sword that was the sum of all my achievements, and though I was beautiful, he wanted her above all things, above me."
"So it was unrequited love," Sabran said, "or was it jealousy?"
"A little of both, I suppose. I was younger then, caged by a tender heart."
Tane saw a flicker in the shadows. Sabran moved a little to the left. Caliba circled with her. Here, on this stretch of the ship, it was as if they were in the eye of the storm. No worms breathed fire near the witch.
"I watched Innis grow into a great nation. At first, that was enough," Caliba confessed, "to see my daughters thrive."
"You still could," Sabran told her softly. "I have no mother now, Caliba. I would welcome another." Caliba paused. Just for a moment, her face looked as naked as the rest of her.
"No, my liking,"
she said, just as softly.
"I mean to be a queen as I once was. I will sit on the throne you can no longer hold."
She walked towards Sabran. The knights of the body pointed their swords at her.
"I watched my daughters rule a country for 1,000 years. I watched you preach against the Nameless One. What you fail to see is that the only way forward is to join with him. When I am queen, Innis will never burn again. It will be a draconic place, protected. The people will never know you are gone. Instead, they will rejoice to know that Sabran the Ninth, after reconciling her differences with the Nameless One, was blessed with his immortality, that she will reign forever."
Sabran tightened her grip on her sword. She was waiting for something, Tane realized. Her gaze flicked past her forebear, towards the bow of the ship. "I misbelieve your grand talk," the queen said, her tone pitying. "I think that this is simply the last act in your revenge, your desire to destroy all trace of Galleon Berethnet." Her smile was pitying.
You are as beholden to your heart as you ever were. Suddenly, Caliba was right in front of her. The knights of the body started towards her, but she was already too close, close enough to kill their queen if they moved against her now. Sabran held very still as the witch pushed a wet strand of hair from her brow.
It will hurt me, Caliba whispered, to hurt you. You are mine, but the Nameless One will bring great things to this world, greater things than even you could bring.
She kissed her forehead.
When I give him to you, he will know at last that I cherish him above all things.
Sabran suddenly wrapped her arms around the witch. Tane stiffened, taken aback. Forgive me, the queen said. Caliba wrenched away, eyes flared. Quick as a scorpion, she turned, fire igniting in her hand again. A narrow blade ran her through, the Steren blade, a slither of the comet. Caliba drew in a sharp breath. As she stared at the shard of metal in her breast, her hooded killer revealed her face. I do this for you. Ea twisted the blade deeper. There was no malice in her expression. I will take you to the Hawthorn tree, Caliba. May it bring you the peace you did not find here. Dark lifeblood flowed from the witch, down her breast and past her navel. Even immortals bled.
Eadaz Uknara.
The name left her like a curse.
You are so very like Cleolind, you know.
Blood speckled her lips.
After all this time, I see her spirit. Somehow, she outlived me.
As she sank over her mortal wound, the Witch of Iniska let out a scream. It echoed across the water, far into the abyss. Ascalon fell from her hand and Sabran seized it. At the last, Caliba grabbed her by the throat.
Your house, she whispered to the queen, is built on barren ground.
Sabran strained to break her grip, but her hand was a vice.
I see chaos, Sabran the Ninth. Beware the sweet water.
Ead pulled her blade free, and more blood pulsed from Caliba, like wine from a gourd. By the time she had fallen to the deck, her eyes were cold and dead as emeralds. Sabran gazed in silence at the naked body of her forebear, one hand at her throat, where finger marks had already blossomed. Ead removed her cloak and covered the witch, while Tane picked up another sword. A bell rang from the Innish fleet. The sails of the Defiant stirred. Tane watched as the same wind set the Cycones flag aflutter. Even the cannon fire seemed to grow softer as a preternatural hush descended.
This is it, Ead said, her voice calm.
He is coming. In the sky, the fire breathers moved the way starlings did, whirling in great clouds of wing, a dance of welcome. In the distance, the sea exploded upward. The waters of the abyss convulsed. Shouts of panic spiked the night as waves crested the ships. Tane hit the gunwale as the Defiance lurched, unable to wrest her gaze from the horizon. The eruption of water rose high enough to obliterate the stars. Amidst the chaos, a shape took form. She had heard stories of the beast. Every child had grown up hearing about the nightmare that had crawled out of the mountain to ravage all the world. She had seen images of him, richly painted in gold leaf and red lacquer, with blots of soot ink where eyes ought to be. No artist had captured the magnitude of their enemy, or the way the fire inside him made him smoulder. They had never seen it for themselves. His wingspan was the length of 2 lacustrine treasure ships. His teeth were as black as his eyes. The waves crashed and thunder rolled. Prayers in every language. Dragons rising from the sea to meet their enemy, letting out haunting calls. Soldiers on the Defiance brandished their weapons, and on the Lord of Thunder, archers exchanged their arrows for longer ones, fletched with purple feathers. Poison arrows might fell a wyvern or a cockatrice, but nothing would get under those scales. Only one sword had a chance. Ead retrieved Ascalon.
Tane!
She shouted over the din.
Tyrkit!
Tane took its weight in her clammy hands. She had expected it to be heavy, but it felt as if it could be hollow. The sword that could slay the true enemy of the East, the sword that could earn back her honour.
Go!
Ead gave her a push.
Go!
Tane scraped up all her fear and crushed it into a dark place inside her. She made sure her borrowed sword was secure at her side. Then,
Keeping Ascalon in hand, she made for the closest sail. She scaled the battens, fighting through wind and rain until she reached the top.
Tane!
She turned. A Cycones dragon with silver scales was rising from the waves.
Tane!
The rider beckoned her. Jump! Tane had no time to think. She threw herself from the beam into nothing. A hand sheathed in a gauntlet took hold of her arm and hauled her into the saddle. Ascalon almost slipped from her embrace, but she pinned it with her elbow.
"It's been a while," Onren called.
The saddle was just big enough for two, but there was nothing to hold a second rider in place.
"Onren," Tane started, "if the honored sea general finds out you let me ride with..." "You are a rider, Tane."
Her voice was muffled by the mask.
"And this is no place for rules."
Tane pushed Ascalon into a sheath on the saddle and secured it. Her fingers were wet and icy, clumsy on the hilt. The sheath had not been made for such a long blade, but it would hold the sword better than she could. Seeing her struggle, Onren reached into one of the pouches and passed Tane a pair of gauntlets. She slipped them over her hands.
"I assume you found a way to kill the Nameless One on your travels," Onren said. "A scale of his chest armor is loose,"
Tane had to shout to be heard over the clash of weapons and the roars of worms and fire.
"We have to tear it off and pierce the flesh beneath with this sword."
"I think we can manage that."
Onren gripped the horn of the saddle.
"Don't you know, Rumo?"
Her dragon hissed his agreement. Cloud frothed from his nostrils. Tane held on to Onren, her hair flying about her face. The Cycones dragons were coming together. Most of their riders held longbows or pistols. At the same time, the fire breathers flocked to protect their master, forming an appalling swarm in front of him. Tane felt Onren freeze. After all they had learned, all they had sacrificed, none of their schooling had prepared them for this. This was war. They were close to the front of the formation, behind their elders. The great Tapuka the Silver led the charge, with the sea general buckled into the saddle on her back. The imperial dragon flew beside her, leading the Lacustrine dragons. Tane shielded her eyes against the rain, straining to see. The unceasing emperor was a small figure astride his fellow ruler. Bracing herself, Tane locked her arms around Onren. With a growl, the great Narumo lowered his head. When they hit the flock, the collision almost threw Tane from the saddle. She clung to Onren, who hacked with her sword at wings and tails, while Narumo rammed his horns into anything in his path. All was uproar and thunder, screaming and death, rain and ruin. She had the short-lived sensation that this was a terrible dream. Lightning flashed through her eyelids. When she looked up, she met the eyes of the Nameless One. He stared into her soul, and when he opened his mouth, she saw doom. Fire and smoke blasted from his jaws. It was as if a volcano had erupted into the night. The dragon elders parted around the Nameless One and snapped at his sides, but Narumo, like his rider, had a taste for breaking rules. He dived beneath the inferno and rolled. Tane tightened her arms around Onren as the world turned on its head. Another dragon tried to avoid the cavernous mouth, but the Nameless One bit her in two. Scales glittered as his teeth scattered them, like a fistful of coins tossed into the air. Tane watched, sickened as the two halves of the dragon sank towards the sea. Smoke was in her chest and eyes. Blood surged to her head. They passed beneath the Nameless One, close enough for the heat from his belly to parch her skin and steal what was left of her breath. As Narumo spiraled, Onren thrust out her sword. It sparked over red scales but made no mark. Narumo swerved between the spikes of an endless tail, and then they were flying even higher, above the beast, back towards the flock.
"I see you, rider."
Tane stared at the Nameless One. His eye was upon her.
"You carry a blade I know well."
The voice rang in every crevice of her mind.
"It was last in the possession of the White Worm. Did you slay her for it, as you now hope to slay me?"
Her hand flinched to her temple. She could feel his rage in her very bones, in the hollows of her skull.
"We need to get closer," Onren said, panting.
Narumo was moving back into formation, but his breathing was just as labored as hers. The heat had baked the moisture from his scales.
"I smell the fire inside you, daughter of the East. Soon your ashes will scatter the sea. I suppose that befits one who swims with the slugs of the water."
Tears streamed down her face. Her head was going to burst open.
"Tane, what is it?"
"Onren," she gasped. "Do you hear his voice?"
"Whose voice?"
She cannot hear me. Only those who have tasted of the trees of knowledge can, the nameless one said.
Tane sobbed in agony.
I was born out of the hidden fire, forged in the vital furnace that gave you but one spark. For as long as you live, I will live inside you.